Welcome to the MTR Network. We are here to discuss season one of The Passage. I said that we would review The Passage, and I thought that we would do it while the show was on. And then it was like, it's the season finale. And I was like, I guess we'll be just doing a review of the whole season. I'm here with the Doctor and Ro, and we are going to discuss this show, which I also called Mark Paul Gosselaar Raises a Black Child.
Look, they had him braiding that baby's hair at the end, and obviously he wasn't braiding that baby's hair.
Oh, I mean,
but he was just standing there holding the end like, yeah, I did stuff.
Yeah, he's like, let me put these little rubber bands on the end after you're done.
He brought the appropriate supplies to the party. That's it.
He's like, he held the jar of hair cream while she did the work.
He held the blue magic.
Oh, gosh. So I'll start with you, Ro. What did you think of season one of The Passage? And I think you have read the book, so you do you have like that context going in?
I loved what they did. I was deeply concerned because I was completely confused as to how they were going to try to go through the number of years that exist in this universe in the books to bring it to TV. So I was really happy that they kind of went with more of a picking a main point and the entrance point they did in. I mean, I liked the casting and I didn't think I would, except for Amy. I thought Amy was perfect casting from day one. I liked how they kept the story simple and they played into some of the irony of, oh, you know, they didn't even want to use the word vampire because, you know, why would you want to do that if you're a scientist? I enjoyed the pacing. I thought they were driving me crazy, cliffhangering every episode, but that's a good thing because it meant I didn't forget to come back Mondays to watch it. I thought it was a good story arc, and I'm super excited to see what they do for season two, even though I'm deeply confused as to where in the hell they're going to get some of the things that they didn't get from the first book that need to be introduced before they move on in the show. But yeah, I'm a fan, and I did not expect to be. And I love these books. I love these books enough to where I have, in fact, I have them in a perfectly made slip cover because I have first edition, first printing signed by the author because I made him sign my books.
How about you, Doctor?
I enjoyed it. Like Ro, I was concerned as well. I was excited, but also concerned because these are 700, they're not Game of Thrones thickness, but they're 700 page books. And just remembering what happened when they took Michael Crichton's Rising Sun and completely gutted it into that movie with Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes, I was concerned. I was concerned with, you know, I love Idris, but they jacked up the Dark Tower. So I was like, oh, what are they going to do with this? And it was that was a book that I read with my oldest when he was away at military school. So we would read it individually and then talk about it during Hit the Call as he got to make home. So it had a special place for both of us. We were excited about it. And the fact that they only covered really the first third of the first book in season one, I'm like, Fox, if you cancel this, I swear for Christ, I will drive to Hollywood and beat y'all to death.
I will provide you with a place to stay and join your trip from San Diego to Hollywood to help you make it happen.
Listen, I mean, it was wonderful. I love Mark Paul Gosselaar. I feel like he is a child actor that escaped the horrors and trauma that came with being a child actor and picked some really smart roles growing up. And I've always enjoyed his acting. I appreciate that even he recognized that Zach Morris was a problematic trash ass individual.
I don't agree with Mark on that, but okay.
Zach Morris was appropriating, gentrifying, rapey trash.
We're not going to talk about that.
You're outvoted. You're outvoted.
I don't care about the popular vote.
The only thing, I let it go towards the end, but three quarters of the way, oh shoot. There was an echo. Three quarters of the way through this season, I'm like, when are they going to eat Richardson's face? Because I don't care that they're trying to make him sympathetic. I remember Richardson from the book, and I want them to eat his face.
Yeah.
Okay, like, Richardson is, he not dead yet? He's the one that was Mark Paul Gosselaar's friend who was dating.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Clark, head of security.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I have to make sure.
Every time an episode started, I would make you die. I'm like, why isn't he dead yet? I hate him.
Okay.
So bad in the book.
So let's talk about, speaking of people who you hated, I just wanted to get ate the whole time. And when it finally happened, it was glorious. Dr. Pett, the Asian doctor.
Oh my God, yeah.
He was a lesson in, do you even sci-fi, bro? Because from the beginning, they were looking at him. They're like, there's something weird. There's something off. I think they're talking to each other. I don't think they're as brain dead as we think they are. I think there's something going on. And he's all like, well, we've done the studies and there's no brain activity. And I know people say they're having weird dreams, but that's just people being weird. And I was just like, nigga, they are giving you all of the clues. All of the clues. So when that one vampire, when he thought he was doing a deep brain stimulation and he thought he was controlling the one vampire, and then he stood up and he was like, wait, why are you moving? I didn't want you to move. And he was like, oh, you think you're in charge here. I have never, like, I scream laughed. I was like, thank you. You please eat him. I wanted him dead.
First time in my life I ever rooted for a rapist.
Right? Right?
Right?
And for this a white man to kill a man of color.
This show has you conflicted. You're like, I know all these people is murder ambassadors or at least, you know, responsible for somebody dying, but could you just snap that one's neck? Just let this kill him. And I'm like, you got me out here rooting for murderers and serial rapists and wanting Asian people to die on film badly. I wanted him to just throw him across the room just to let him know. Because he was one of them people like to talk over a woman, steal her ideas, act all arrogant and condescending in meetings like, I could make it work if you put me in charge. You wouldn't be having these problems. And then to be disregarded of the dude who started the whole program. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I needed him to die painfully.
Oh, and yeah, speaking of rooting against characters of colors, Sykes, as soon as she said we need a child, I'm like, oh, bitch, you got to die.
Okay, of the scientists, every single scientist on this show, I was legit like, do you even sci-fi? What the hell? Do none of these, did Jurassic Park, like none of these.
exist in this universe.
Does not exist in this universe because y'all are making all of the wrong decisions. So
but their scientists are more scientists than any other scientists because they won't say vampire because that's not real.
Yeah, they're so scientisty that they made all of the scientists, the classic scientist mistakes. So,
but that's why I like the fact that they started this series with Project Noah because, you know, it gives you a concrete place to anchor understanding this virus and what's going on with it because the book is a little bit more amorphous and it's a little, it takes you longer to get there. What, you have like 93 years or some nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, your first entrance in there is through a colony of survivors rather than Project Noah. And I don't know whether or not it would have had the same visceral effect. It definitely wouldn't have made it to where you connected with characters and started rooting for motherfuckers to die. But, I really felt that that was something that they did that was super smart for translating this to TV. They gave you a core group of people. You have your heroes, your anti-heroes, and your flat out villains. And then they mixed up what everything happened with everybody. And they let time move at a contemporary pace that you could understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they kept the element of using the TV to show, you know, that sense of urgency of why, regardless of anything else, the fact that we, you know, should be paying attention that this is bad in this. They're like, oh, but this other thing is so much bigger and the greater good, you know? And that's why I was like, can we just wake Sykes up? Cause bitch, you started saying you got here cause you wanted to talk about, you know, saving cancer, but you're making vampires and leaving them in your basement. So
Okay.
And keep making them. Oh, just go younger. Stop making the fucking vampires. Until you can.
Yeah.
Samples. Well, this
but
is
can
the
we
thing.
Also talk
is,
about this overwhelming need to use really bad people for these really dangerous experiments? So, why are we using like none?
Let's start with the fact that they go down to Peru or something like that because they hear rumors of some old thing that is like still living in the cave, and they want to find it. That thing rips homeboy's neck out, Fanning. And then they're like, no, we'll just bring you back to the States and figure this out. Something just ripped your friend's neck out that may or may not be human. Okay, we're going to start Shut there. Up. Then we're going to...
Shanna, I love you, but I set you on fire in the cave. I love you, and I'll let everybody know you went out like a soldier, but you're dead. And I burned you alive. You didn't come out the cave. We didn't make it to the hospital. You didn't get a chance to walk down the hallway to me for me to see that your neck was healed. Because I set you on fire in the cave with the thing that bit you.
And we learn later on that that's what Fanning told him to do. It was the last decent act Fanning did before it overcame him. Yeah, he was a dick in life. But when his death was about to come, he was like, nah, dog, you got to kill me.
And then we're like,
no, you're my friend. I can save you. No, dear, you cannot.
So as your friend is becoming brain dead and craving blood but also, oh, look, he heals really fast. Why don't we now do experiments on humans? But where are we going to get these humans? I don't know. Death Row. It's just a series of bad decisions. It's a series of bad decisions that also could have been saved by watching just one sci-fi movie.
It is, but at the same time, isn't that true to life? Isn't that what we currently we don't do it as much out with medical experiments? Mm-hmm. But back in the day, we were doing it. Now we're just using them as slave labor. But before, let me finish. Before, when we were doing experiments, we found the least of in society, including prisoners, because that's someone that no one really gives a shit about.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we still do this crazy shit with, like, on a mental health kick when they like want people to volunteer for, you know, experiments and stuff and internships for at the college level. They almost always go in through the door of mental health. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so you're already getting people who you presume have altered or something going on with their brain chemistry, which is not a good baseline. And that's who you're bringing in and using to experiment on. So we're not. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Shanna's right. One good sci-fi watch would tell them that this is a really bad way to build your control group.
And then they also just happened to get lucky. And by get lucky, I mean not have complete psychotics in Carter and Shauna. Like, it just so happened that they were the two people, the stories of the two people who weren't horrible people. Like, Carter was on death row because he was essentially framed. And then Shauna, you know, her killing that she did was, we find, somewhat justified. So it's like they weren't complete psychos. Like, thank God you had like at least two of them who weren't completely insane.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, we don't learn. We definitely, on the one hand, I like the fact that they did it so blatantly, because it's the kind of conversation we can have now about we really don't learn. We don't learn from ourselves. We don't learn from history. We don't even learn from the TV shows we make.
Because they over here trying to revive woolly mammoths. And I'm like, if only there were like five movies that could tell us why that isn't a good idea.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I was like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that's not one of those whole, you know, trying to be ironic. It's like, this is where you're used. This, they're like, why? Why? Like, when people start talking about transparency, the only thing I ever want to say is I would like to see the DOD's budget. All of it.
Yeah.
Because that's who funded Project NOAA. And then this dude over here, he's like, you know, need to know. No, I need to know why you want me to bring you a child. Mm-hmm. Like, of all the things that Walgast character had ever been asked to do. I mean, if there's a good way that you don't want someone to feel attached to someone, have them bringing people from death row knowing that if this fails, they die. But they were already set to die anyway. Fine. Right. But the second you get into people who were questionable, I really think people should have been asking questions about Shanna because she didn't present the same way. Mm-hmm. And they picked her because she didn't present the same way as their previous people. And then Carter. And then the jump from Carter to bring me a 9-year-old?
So did they say what? Because I hadn't read the books, the way it was presented to me was that it was going to be similar to Girl with All the Gifts. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I thought it was like, oh, there's something different or special about Amy. Like that's why she doesn't turn the way the others do. But like legit, it was just that she was young. Like it could have been anybody. She was just the kid that was picked because she had a dead mom and she was an orphan.
So in the book, her origin is different. Her mom abandoned her at a convent. And Lacey, Wolgast's friend, is actually a nun there. Okay. But I got the sense, and Ro, you can help me out because it's been a minute since I read it, that Lacey formed this really strong attachment to Amy even before she was injected. So I don't know. I got the sense that there was something inherently special about Amy.
Yeah, I always got the sense that Amy was special. Like, if it had, they could have picked any other child, but the result would have been different. Mm-hmm. That it mattered that it was Amy.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think the show kind of
dismissed that.
Yeah.
And then I wish they hadn't, but.
Yeah, I was wondering if she is special or like. I guess, and maybe that's something they'll get into in the second season, because I was like, if that's the case, then like no kid should turn. Which
right.
they didn't yeah, show. Like yeah. everyone seemed to turn when all shit went crazy.
I think I'm assuming second season, they're probably going to play up more about, they'll have to because of the way they built it around Fanning and the Hive. Mm-hmm. You know, that
they're around some, you know, and being able to pick one and how right. that collection extends that person's life.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think they're going to have to play out this whole Hive element that they've done, but maybe the way they get around the whole thing with the choice with the kid is the children would probably make the choice that the only smart woman on this damn show, Jonas's wife.
Mm-hmm. She's like, fuck it.
I'm out. Like, you know, because there's always that moment when they start to just demonstrate all of the symptoms where Fanning shows up. And, you know, first he tried to do all casual with Carter and get him to drink his, you know, take a drink with him, which obviously would have put him on his team. But there always comes that moment where they have a choice to go or to stay. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to do something with that to explain why you don't have a whole hive of little, you know, vampire ass children who look perfectly normal, who are Amy's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I agree with you. They did it. Justin Cronin did it a little bit more gracefully in the book. There's something special about Amy. People are drawn to Amy before any of this stuff happens to her. And, you know, the way they play up her actual change and her healing abilities and things like that, the show leaned more towards paying attention to what were her offensive weapons were going to be.
Mm. Yeah.
And they didn't really give you a whole lot of understanding of the passive weapons and the things that were just naturally changing about her. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that they get into that second season. I think they've left themselves some really, really dynamic and interesting places to go, but they are, that still let them pull from the books, but they are off script.
Yeah. Well, I was just reading and I think that Justin Cronin said they are going to, definitely second season is going to be all at the colony in the future. So
okay.
They're yeah. starting from there. And I think they're going to do some flashbacks and show you the intervening years.
That's smart. And it's going to means it's going to get funky, freaky and crazy.
Yeah. Cause the present day ends with the launches, the nuclear yep. launches. Yeah. And remind me, Ro, I was pretty sure that in the book, we launched on ourselves. It wasn't other countries like, oh, yeah, the U.S. has got to fucking go.
Yeah, no, like, we truly, yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's what it felt like in the show, too.
These are hot spots.
Yeah.
The U.S. was like, these are hot spots. Launch.
Yeah. And so then and the rest of the world was basically like, y'all need to figure it out because we're not helping you. which I kind of like.
We're sending our people over there to die.
I really like that.
We got nothing but love for you from here.
Like, I love the idea of the rest of the world being like, nah, son.
Like, thanks for playing, but we out.
Oh,
yeah. It'll be interesting to see. You and I both know that it's unlikely that a show that's airing on TNT is going to have us do the fire on ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I did like the elements when they were saying, "Look, you know, the whole world is meeting and we're not invited."
Yeah,
I thought those were really nice, smart takes and ways to go about doing stuff.
And I like how that dude was trying so hard. He's like, "But, if." You just let us, like, and we kind of got a thing, and we just need to give it to folks. And they were like, your most effective way of dispersing stuff is through the CDC. And we heard that there is no more CDC. And he was like, yeah.
Why you got to bring up all shit?
I know.
Yeah. Like, he had nothing to say.
He was just like, So, favorite characters. Who wants to start?
Amy, of course.
I love Amy, but you know, me and Amy had some moments. Particularly the episode where she was mad about wanting to go back for her book. And like, I knew, because I know how television works, that clearly the book had some meaning other than it just being a book. But Mark Paul Gosselaar was trying so hard with her. He was like, I need you to not show them your powers, because they are already, like, they're expecting, and we've said that you don't have any powers, but if you show them what you can do, it's going to be bad. And she's like, okay, cool. Can we go get my book? He's like, not right now. And then here she go in front of the dude. Oh, have you seen me, like, run really fast? Have you seen me be able to track fanning? I was like, if she don't set her little ass down.
And I tried to explain to Shanna over our group text that she is a prepubescent 10/11-year-old who has been kidnapped and experimented on, traumatized.
Bitch, you are fucking with our safety.
The fact that it took her so long to act out is a miracle in and of itself.
No, I agree. I like the fact that she was still a child.
Yeah.
She acted like a child. She did dumb stuff like a child. I didn't like the fact that they leaned away from how a black child would act every once in a while. I don't know a single black child on the face of the earth who was showing that creepy ass man from the DOD anything. Just especially if they can read his mind.
Yeah. That's how especially I felt. I was like, I just feel like she clearly knew that this is not the dude to trust. So I was like, girl, like, I get that you're like mad and you're pissed and you want to go get your book. But like, also, you know not to trust this man. You know not to trust this white man over Mark Paul.
But I liked it. So I agree. I like the fact that they kept her age appropriate and it was played well. And she did all that stupid petulant shit that children will do. But so I really liked Amy Belafonte. But my favorite character slowly started to be Shanna Babcock.
She's so good.
Yeah.
She's so good. I thought that actress did fantastic from the beginning. She was sinister, sexy, and just when you did find out her backstory, it was heartbreaking. I loved her.
Yeah. You started to realize you got a lot more, you know, character development and emotional development than you thought, especially when you got to the episode about her backstory. But she was snarky. I mean, she had some of the best lines. She was a nice connective thread between Sykes, Carter, Jonas, and Amy, because she kind of, you know, interacted with them all on a particular level. I thought she helped move the story forward and kept it, you know, alive and relevant in a way that some of the other characters were a little less well-dimensioned.
And also,
she slowly ended up being my favorite.
She was kind of like the intermediate bad as well. Because like at first I thought maybe, you know, given what Pet was saying and given how they were acting, I did think that like maybe Fanning, she seemed to communicate a little bit better than him. But then I realized he was also like holding back and specifically not communicating with certain people like Jonas. like he didn't want Jonas to know that he had a whole ass plan, including bring your wife here so I can make her a vampire.
Since you won't let me die, I'm gonna go ahead and get that girl I've always wanted.
Oh God.
She just happens to be your wife.
When you get to that backstory and you realize that half of the shit that we're going through is over some woman, I was like, really? That's an exceptional level of petty.
I actually yelled at the TV, just turn on all the damn lights. I was like, turn on the UAV, UVB, just like take them all out over a girl.
It's like, this is so stupid. And then the Jonas is all like, and she chose me. Dude, you still haven't won anything here. Yeah. Like, she's dead. She still has Alzheimer's. You turned your friend into a vampire for nothing. You have not won. That's why I liked at the end when my man was like ready to commit suicide.
He was like, Lacey's like, you do not get off that easy, sir. You have work to do.
Oh my God. Get on up. Lacey, when she got shot, we were convinced they killed that black woman.
I was so heated. I was like, no, the fuck y'all did not just kill the black woman in her own. I was like, how you gonna build up and give me all this and give her a gut shot? The only saving grace was I was like, they don't have anybody else that they've introduced to be who Lacey is. Mm-hmm. They have to give us Lacey back. That's the only thing I hung my hat on. Like I was like, I'm not going to make it. I'm like, this doesn't work without Lacey.
Yeah,
exactly.
She's
the only reason why I only have one broken remote in my house right now. Just one.
She's so well done. I think my favorite character, I think it has to be Mark Paul Gosselaar. I just loved how, and maybe, again, this is something they'll get into second season now that I know it's kind of in the book. He immediately fell in love with Amy. Like, he, like, they were like, go find us a child. This is the kid. And Mark Paul Gosselaar got there and was like, I love this child. I will let no harm come to her. You will pry her from my cold, dead fingers. Like, right off the bat. And I was like, this is beautiful. I love everything about him.
I will also say that even though it was hard to watch, how he lost his daughter in this one works a little bit better to me than in the book.
Oh my God.
In the book, she dies. She's like 3 years old when she dies.
Oh, yeah. This was much more compelling and dynamic and painful and hurtful. And it made his immediate connection to Amy and the things that he was willing to do makes so much more sense. Mm-hmm. Like that they made them almost comparable in age to where he could see, especially when you got to see his daughter's personality.
Yeah.
Yes. She's basically, Amy is basically his daughter 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sitting over here. I was like, y'all bastards is trying to make me cry.
Oh, I did. I was like, because I was like, was it a car accident? How did he lose his baby? Because I'm like, oh, she's alive. She's playing soccer. She's feisty. Mm. And then he was standing there and she was walking towards the door. I was like, please don't let this be it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is it.
Man, I wear glasses. I can't start crying during TV shows. My glasses fog up. I can't see. But yeah, now a friend of mine was like, oh, they're going to make it be some long dried out death because she's cancer, because that's what they like to how they like to kill white kids on TV when their dad worked for the FBI. And I was like, you're a terrible person, but you're not wrong. And I really hope that's not But I was really hoping that's not what they were going to do, but I wasn't expecting the whole store. And I was, as soon as he said he needed to go across the street, I was like, don't do it. Fuck the markers. Just phone it in. I mean,
I thought maybe it was a car. Maybe a car hits her. Oh God, girl, you got to look both ways before you cross the street. And then I was like, fuck.
I was like, they're going to make this. And like, when I realized that they use that as the anchor for why everything else in his life fell apart, I'm like, she's going to get murdered and I'm not going to be able to handle this.
Well, it was also well done because his retaliation of killing the man and Richards being the one that knew his secret and helped him cover it up. So, I was sitting there like, how does he go from his wife? Like, I get that his kid died, but like, how do you go from like, and now I'm on the road getting people from death row for like experiments? Like, Richards makes sense because he doesn't have a family. He doesn't have, you know, like he doesn't have anyone that he's close to. So it's like, how does he go to this? And it's like, he killed a man and he knew that what he did was wrong. And even in the name of his daughter, he knew it wasn't okay. And he couldn't look his wife in the eye anymore. You know, like she, I loved it because she, I think she had really internalized of like, he and I can't be together because he feels so much guilt over our daughter dying. And then there was a whole extra element that she didn't even know had happened.
And that also made him more sympathetic than his book counterpart. Because otherwise you're looking at his book counterpart like, oh, you just okay lying to people and sending them off to God only knows what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's Wallgass is a higher degree of trash in the book. He doesn't...
He didn't have a sympathetic backstory. He was just... No. He was okay with the concept of grabbing a kid until he had to grab the kid.
Yeah,
like they were both conscienceless best. Like Clark Richards does not have a conscience. I don't care. There are no redeeming qualities about this man. He is suited and booted and built to be a particular type of soldier, you know, the kind the U.S. produces best. And I said it. And I like that they used all of that. What? I'm just saying, I like that they didn't try to make him likable, you know, and when you get down to it at the last moment, the redeeming thing would have been for him to die.
Yeah. And he still didn't, because he's an ass.
No, he still makes that last selfish choice and he's still holding other people responsible. Like when he's talking to Jonas, you know, it'd be really great if you could hurry up and get on that. You did this to yourself again. Like he's perpetually putting himself into these cycles of just always doing the thing that's the most self-serving thing, even if it's nowhere near the lesser of any evil, you know? So keeping Shauna Babcock from losing her mind in Vegas, oh, that's great. You don't have another hotspot, but he didn't do it. And he didn't agree because he wanted to help Shauna. He did it because he didn't want to die.
Mm-hmm. He didn't even do it because it wasn't a thing where she walked up on him and turned him against his will. She sat there, had a whole ass conversation, gave him a peaceful out, and gave him a choice. So she gives you a choice, and then in your toxic masculine ways, you blame her for the choice that you made not to get your face eaten, which I'm still sitting here like, I need somebody to eat his fucking face.
You know when I knew I wasn't gonna like him? When I realized that he was dating this Black woman scientist and having a mental and emotional affair with a vampire the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck him. She didn't even know. And then when you find out, like, on the flip side of that, that, like, Shauna and I don't remember her name, the scientist, had, like, kind of a friendship. Sykes. Thank you. Like they had kind of, I didn't tweet a lot about this show because I did not learn anyone's names and I didn't want to be the Black lady scientist, the Asian dude. Like I didn't want to say that on Twitter. So
there's the person who tried to name one of our Supergirl episodes in Manchester Yellow.
Yeah.
No, you did not. You're fired.
You promised me you weren't going to tell people that.
I'm not people. It's just me. It's just me here.
Actually, it's on the podcast.
We
now.
Are recording. Like, we are recording. That's how that works. This is not a private conversation. Okay.
I thought maybe I could distract you a little. We could just, you know, slide on by that. But I didn't tweet a lot about this show, one, because I was hyper protective of it, and I've had shows that I adore ruined by inadvertently getting pulled into the online tweeting and live tweeting that people are doing, and two, because I usually would wait until the full recording was done on my TV and then sit down to watch it so I could just fast forward through all of the commercial products that I'm then never going to buy because now they're forcing me to watch their commercials during my show. I didn't know how I felt about things until the show was significantly a long way in. And I felt like anything that you kind of try to live tweet or talk about end up being a spoiler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the way they designed the show, which to me is a sign of a good show, but it makes it difficult if you want to engage in online conversations where you're not the asshole spoiling. if almost anything that you react to, you end up spoiling something that turns out to be a big, huge page turner type, you know, moment.
I didn't live tweet it because after watching Book Purist and the Game of Thrones fandom, I didn't want to hear it from Book Purist and the Passage fandom. Mm. So aside from general reaction saying, I'm loving the show, I want a season two, I wasn't, plus it was a show I promised my son we'd watch together and he was not available to watch it live.
Right.
And all three of us, you know, my youngest goes to bed earlier than everyone else because he's younger. It was just a thing. So we always watched it a few days later.
If you can't be a book purist about a trilogy like this one, you can't.
You can't be a book purist about any novel that's adapted to the screen. Because there are things that you can do in books that don't translate well to visual media. Facts.
But especially one like this, like, I mean, just out the gate, there's no way on God's green earth they could have stuck to being loyal to this situation because this is more than just a post-apocalyptic world, you know? This is more than just, post-science experiment gone wrong. This is more than just a girl who saves the world narrative. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when you put all those things together and you have all those moving parts and you have all these really amazing horror elements that you can now visually display, like to demand a show be like, completely locked into how it was presented or how it unfolded or anything from the books is to say you don't want a TV show.
Yeah.
Right.
And what I like about anything that's horror, I always think it's really well done when it's one setting, when it's just, you know, like really locked into one setting. So I think the show really starts to take off the moment, as much as I liked all the action and stuff when they were running away from the house, it really takes off once everyone is locked in that house together and trying to figure
your closed room kind of girl.
Yeah. I mean, I love that stuff. Like, especially, you know, like you have Fanning getting in people's heads, that poor janitor. He was just trying to do his job. He was all sorts of fucked up.
He couldn't catch a break from anybody. The staff bullied him. Fanning's in his head. Other dudes trying to get people to eat him. He can't win.
Yeah. And when you realize that the guy that the head of the DOD thinks is his, like, security person is actually one of the vampires. Because they're like, we've only interacted with maybe four of them, but they're supposed mm-hmm. to be a dozen. And yeah. So when you realize it was him, I was like,
amazing reveal. I'm sorry.
It was so well, yeah.
That,
like,
was amazing reveal.
It's Kumar De Los Reyes. Like, I know that actor. So the minute I saw him, I was like, oh, this is good. Like, and when he came in and I did think he was the head of security, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Because Kumar De Los Reyes, he don't play. He about to fuck
yeah,
some vampires.
Yeah, as soon as I saw
up.
Who it was, and I was like, see, first he looked good. Second, he dead. He a vampire in the basement. Nope, he ain't real. He is not real. As soon as James LaGrosse showed up as the DOD guy, I was like, you're about to have a very bad day. They're going to use you shamelessly. You look like you got an easy mind to overcome. That dude is not real. Mm-hmm. He is not real. He is not there. You are talking to an empty room because they never panned away. They never mm-hmm. panned out. When they had those scenes, mm-hmm. when they did that boxed in, and I was like, why is the camera so doing this back and forth pan? It never expands out to the whole room. But when they do, they always had some obstruction where the guy who was the head of his security was supposed to be standing. I was like, nah, that's a vampire. I was like, this is about to get ugly.
Like, I just loved it. And they were like, yeah. Let me introduce you to subject two.
All of the reveals, all of the turns, even when you thought you picked up on something, the giveaways were just great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, and you know, that's, this is how TNT it just get, this is,
it's
like,
Fox, when,
it's Fox.
This is on Fox.
No, it's on Fox, but the only other place that's why I stopped, because I realized I hadn't said. The only other show that got me was one that I was watching on TNT from one of their little summer shows.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I was like, because you said TNT earlier, too. I'm like, wait.
Do you watch Shooter? I think that comes on.
I,
either TNT or TBS.
Which one?
Shooter with Ryan Phillippe. Yeah. I think that's also like a really, really good show. Like I have that's coming on basic cable because Mr. Yeah. Robot too. I feel like basic cable is kind of stepping its game up, and I do appreciate that.
USA has always had good shows. USA and TNT have always had good summer lineups. It's why people are like, I don't know what to watch. I'm like, I know exactly what I'm watching. I mean, you know, Southland was ridiculous. Claws is great. Mr. Robot, all of those shows and all the people who work on the back end of those shows. This is the first show that's not on either one of those other two channels that I really felt had that same kind of dynamic feel and movement. And I really want to know who's in their writer's room, because this writer's room is fantastic, especially when you're dealing with hundreds of years and now you've got to distill it down without boxing yourself into a corner that you can't write out of. Mm-hmm. And I thought they did that really well on this show. But yeah, the only other shows that I've ever seen have either been on USA or TNT. I don't ever trust Fox.
People sleep on TNT and USA and think of them as just the Law and Order Charmed rerun channels. But like you said, they've got some good original content.
Mm-hmm. Like Falling Water, if you guys haven't watched that. I mean, if you really like the passage and the way that it worked out, Falling Water is a good one. And you'll recognize some familiar faces once you start watching it. But that's why this showrunner and the show and the writer's room, they're just like, yeah. I'm deeply impressed. But like you said, they better not cancel the show. I don't trust Fox.
Yeah,
that's
the problem with Fox.
Every single time they get a really great sci-fi, fantasy, or horror property, they either don't give it time to find an audience, or they get like it's like there's a money grab for them. They get this one really great season where they got all these fantastic ratings and everybody's all in, and then they announce in the middle of the downtime that they ain't coming back.
Yeah.
Hello, Pitch. Hello, Dollhouse. Hello, Firefly. Hello, Almost Human. I'm running out of fingers.
Oh, also,
or they'll keep the show and fuck it up. Hello, Sleepy Hollow.
Right. May it rest in peace forever.
Also, yeah, Mark Paul Gosselaar like just have his shows, because I think Mark Paul Gosselaar has been on some great shows that have had great opening seasons, but for whatever reason, could not find an audience. Mm-hmm. So
the reason is because they didn't give them a chance. Mm-hmm. Like they went hard for this show. They had it at the cons, and then it went quiet until the one trailer popped up set to the Placebo song, mm-hmm. Running Up That Hill. And then you saw that for a couple of times. But I text my friends who live in different states and in different markets. I'm like, are you seeing any advertising for The Passage? She's like, no. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? She's like, yeah, it's like they don't think people hear sci-fi. They didn't get any of the marketing campaigns in what I would think would be significant markets.
I know I saw a bus ad in LA maybe like a couple of weeks before it premiered. And that was, and it was my reminder, like, oh yeah, that's the show I want to see. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's coming out soon. When is that coming out? It's like, thank God for that buffet.
But that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. I don't get it. I just don't get it at all. I was like, you've got this great property. It got good feedback. You got a whole season out. And then you don't tell anybody about it. And then you want to whine when no one's watching your damn show.
I feel like Fox is struggling to embrace the fact that online marketing and social media push is a valid form of feedback and a valid way to renew their shows. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but the idea that you don't just rely on advertising dollars and Nielsen ratings, they still haven't quite grasped that fact yet. And I think that's why we're seeing what we see with the shows that they have and summarily get rid of, even though people are watching them.
Yeah.
They are stuck in these traditional models like, oh, no one's watching live. You know what? Welcome to the 21st century. Little to no one watches shit live anymore.
Yeah. I know why I keep saying TNT, because Rizzoli and Isles is another show that was like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't think anybody was watching it. It started out on regular old, you know, good old fashioned network television. And it was a summer little gap show. And then they started talking about not bringing it back, or then switching it over to being on maybe ABC or something. And that's when they found out from the online response that the entire collective world would lose their entire minds if they took away Rizzoli and Isles. And that show ended up living, but it didn't really get its big, huge push until it went into syndication on TNT. And but ABC and Fox, it's like they think exactly what you say. Social media is nice, but it's not real. So we don't need to worry about it when we're thinking about what shows to keep up. And CBS is the same way. CBS will give us a police procedural with a dude where they just take the same guy from the show they canceled before and write him into a new show, or they'll kill off a popular character on one show and then give him his own show, and they expect to just get the carryover. But you get something like The Passage with Mark. You would think he would get the same kind of treatment, but he doesn't. And it's because it's Fox. Mm-hmm. We're not bitter or anything.
No, the fucking say, yes, we are.
I'm like, look, I will always be mad at Pitch. I don't care what nobody says. Amy is his child with a homegirl from Pitch.
Yes, from Pitch. Yes.
Yeah, that's his. That's his baby.
That's their baby.
That's their baby, and we can just put that to bed right now. It is the general consensus of all here. That is their child.
And it cracks me up because I know it's just funny that the last two shows he's had these deep connections with these black females when his wife is blonde as fuck and their babies are blonde as fuck. I just find that so funny.
Yeah.
A friend of mine just started watching this and texted me a couple times. She's like, are we sure Amy ain't Brad?
Because I'm telling you, the way he imprinted on that baby. He was like, this child is mine. That's it. I have some speculation, but I also know that y'all have read the books. The scene where Amy has that flash forward where her and Fanning see each other and he doesn't attack, and she has that flash forward of basically what I'm calling the Jesus Judas moment. I'm assuming that happens in the future that we're going to see. Like, it is going to, I'm assuming, at some point come down to the two of them again to end this. No, okay.
Yeah, this is a spoiler-free podcast. True.
Have you?
You're gonna get a lot of silence right now.
Okay.
There's also the fact that because they've made so many small changes, they can take it anywhere and still be successful. And I love that they are adapting a book, and that the author has a really strong hand in making the adaption, so they can go anywhere with it.
But that's what I mean when I say that they're like. I get concerned when purists are saying you can't because this. I mean, this is still his world, and it still feels like the world he built. But they've opened up all these different avenues by the entry point and the way they decided to introduce this world, that they can take all these elements that are still true to the trilogy, but they can do them in unique ways that'll be fresh and interesting for the readers. So. Yeah. I don't know whether or not, and I like the fact that they use the Jesus Judas imagery and that you caught it, because I thought it was beautifully done. Well, I don't know whether they're going to give us exactly where things head in the book, but you're not going to get me to be the one to be up on here spoiling Miss Shanna.
Well, I can't remember which vampire story it is, if it's Dracula or there is a vampire story where that was the origin of it.
Dracula 2000?
Yes. Yes.
I thought it was one of the Interview with the Vampire series.
No, nope. It was because the
sorry,
the,
I like vampires.
Yeah, the Interview with the Vampire series, the vampires predate Jesus. Okay. So this one, the they're origin Isis story was that the first vampire was Judas, that he became a vampire and was not able to go back into the sun because he betrayed Jesus.
Oh, I'm not kidding. It's Dracula 2000.
Yeah, I immediately thought of that scene when I saw the Amy Fanning scene. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's Wes Craven. It's Wes Craven's derivation. His origin story for Dracula was Judas. And there was one other one. You probably saw them both. But yeah, you're right. It's the first thing that came to mind for me too. I realize I watch and read a lot of things about vampires now.
You know why I was, and now I was so heartbroken when LA Banks passed away. Like,
oh God. I had just been at a convention where she was talking about her world was getting picked up by HBO.
Yes, and then she and died. Then, like, no.
2 weeks later, they announced that she was severely ill. Mm. And then I was just like, please don't let her die.
And then she did.
Yeah. All things, you said that was such
a goodness,
but I feel better. But I feel better about myself now because I say it the same damn way. But I truly, honestly think that if LA Banks had not passed and her idea and her world of vampires had made it to TV, how vampires are done on TV would never have gotten to be what it is, and no one would have ever sparkled.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We wouldn't have had that bullshit Twilight. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
And they would have probably not annoyed the shit out of me so much by stripping down character traits to give them to different people on True Blood. But, you know, that's a whole other podcast.
So with this whole colony thing and Amy not having aged a day, because you know black don't crack, even in the apocalypse.
Not even your post-apocalyptic future.
I'm wondering who is still going to be around. I think they've already kind of hinted that Richard still will be. Sorry, y'all. He's not getting his face eaten anytime soon.
I'm now just hoping that when his death comes, it's even worse.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm just hoping they go big.
Painful.
But that last line of her saying, I feel like I would know if he were dead, and I don't think he is. So I'm interested, number one, do they let Amy into the colony, given what she is? Because we did see her when she ran away, when she attacked the family. I was like, no, don't run away. He would never want you to run away. But then also, Walgast and his wife are the two people that we know have taken the cure. Mm. And I'm wondering if that prolongs their life.
I would think it is, because it's a retrovirus using their blood.
Mm-hmm. So,
and it's specifically using Amy's. So,
and remember what Lila said? She was like, yeah, he didn't see me as food. He saw me as a curiosity.
Yeah. They're not prey anymore.
Mm. Yeah. So,
which I think is, you know, going to be fun and dangerous if Mr. Walgast is not prey, but he show as hell is a predator.
Because mm-hmm. he was a badass as a human.
Oh my God. When those dudes came, when the guys said to kill him and those dudes try, and I was like, what y'all know about Marvel Gosselaar? Y'all know nothing about him. He has trained for this.
It's one of those moments where you sit here like, y'all didn't bring enough people.
You need way more people.
Like, didn't you see what he did with a handgun? Mm-mm. Y'all ain't ready.
Oh, it was just great.
About to get real bloody. But when he walked in Lacey's house and Lacey had a wall, and it wasn't the wall of guns, I was like, see, that's what's to be in your living room. Forget vinyls. And then he starts identifying things. I was like, see, I knew he was dangerous. I don't know who's going to be left. I think it'll be interesting to see. And you're right. We're probably going to have to deal with Mr. Clark Richardson for a while. I don't know exactly what Amy's going to do. But can we talk about the fact that everybody just kind of sitting around and nobody is looking for them? Like, they know the CDC is destroyed. They know that they were going to take the cure to the CDC. Why is no one looking harder for Lila and Brad, who mm-hmm. have the last lone true synthesis of a cure?
And like, I get
because the U.S. government has always been shit at dealing with crises, and they are so busy trying to Band-aid a problem that can't be band-aided instead of looking for a solution.
Oh, I'm totally convinced all of this happened under Trump's administration.
So what she's saying is this is what happens when you don't properly fund FEMA?
Yeah.
or, you know, have the Corps of Civil Engineers actually empowered? Because you would think that, you know, you got all these different hotspots that you would want the people to, not in them, to be able to have ways to know where the hell to go. But that's just me, you know. Let's be real. I'm trying to find some land and build a compound that has the means of being able to have like wind and solar power and its own source of water, so I can just kill anybody who comes near me in any kind of post-apocalyptic situation. If you're not with me, you're against me. And by with me, I mean me. I'm killing everybody. So,
oh my God. No, I will not seek out Ro in the case of the apocalypse.
If you aren't already in my compound when shit is going down, you cannot come inside. Don't worry, I'll send out alerts so we could all meet in a central location.
Can I get a running start? Something.
Yeah, you'll get a head start if you inside before shit gets real and we know you cool and you have skills that can be of essential use to us, you can stay. But if you're useless, you can't in fodder. And if I don't know you, you can't come in.
Shit, I'm dead.
Now I know you now. Shannon says you're cool. You can come inside, it's cool. I'm just saying. Everyone's like, how would you live in a post-apocalyptic world? I live because you die. I don't have special skills. I'm not Amy. You know, I don't serve the Red Queen. I'm not trying to meet her. Skynet's not happening. I got EMPs. I'm not doing none of this stuff. That's why I really think it'll be interesting this second season when you get into the colony and we get into what kind of personalities they have there. And I think it's an interesting question you have of whether or not they would let Amy in. I don't know. Maybe she'll, you know, relearn to hide herself again. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I just... What's going to be interesting is when she shows up, who's at the colony, and who at the colony knows exactly who and what she is.
Mm.
Like, that's a whole season right there.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they don't use the whole season to do that, but yes. It's one of them cutscenes we'd like to be on a DVD. We don't want it to actually be what you give us on TV, but yeah.
And if
I think the other like, thing would be if there's kinda, other children.
If there's other children, Shauna was really good at, like, she didn't look the way she looked when she was in 4B. So it'll be interesting to see if other Hive members have like been able to live and look relatively normal and maybe infiltrate some of these spaces.
Remember what they were saying, the younger they went, the longer the change took and the more control they had. That's mm-hmm. why Anthony took longer, and I think it's also why Shauna is able to pass when she does pass. Yeah.
And then like what if Carter's there? Like, so there's just so many different ways they can go.
I also think it's how evil your ass was before you got touched.
Yeah, that's the point too. Although, I don't know. Fanny was a dick. Fanny wasn't evil.
Mm-mm.
Who says?
He was a dick. I don't think he was evil.
To me, he seemed he seemed better than Jonas. Like, he seemed like a dude who wasn't good in relationships, but he wasn't evil. He seemed like a decent dude. He just wasn't good.
I think we have a different definition of what could fall into making you come out and your insides on your face look evil. They both, Fanning very easily found them some deep money holes to fund those projects for this Alzheimer research. And it wasn't clean money, and he got it fast, and it came with guns. That tells me a whole lot about the kind of research he does, the risks he's willing to take, and the likelihood it was that he was breaking the damn rules. So that may not be like the traditional sense of evil, but we're not looking at somebody whose soul was clean. So, you know, maybe if it's dirty enough, it showed up on his face. I don't know. And I don't believe that his whole transition to, you know, fuck you, I'm taking over the world, came from nowhere. It wasn't just the girl. It was all of that stuff was inside him. He gave in to that. He decided that's who he was going to be post, you know, munch time. So because like Amy's mother, I know who you are. I know who you raised. You're like your sunshine. And it's like, so each of them had those different choices. Carter was weak as fuck. You know,
oh, Jesus, yes, his dick was not his friend, and that's how he wound up in jail.
Got led by it.
And also, and just not even just his dick wasn't his friend. His dick wasn't his friend, and then he didn't even have the wherewithal to stick up for himself. That's annoyed me more than anything.
That he had no fight in him at all. None. At no stage did he have any fight in him. But I think all those things kind of matters into whether or not you have any control over what your outward appearance is. Like Shauna Babcock she got the worst of a she took the best of a worst deal at every stage. Mm-hmm. And I think that played into the level of skill and control and power she ultimately ended up with through her transition and post-transition. And I think that is kind of true for all of them. Yeah. But it all comes back from evil ass Fanning. I don't care. You're like, he may have had that one moment where he's like, y'all should kill me. I mean, y'all don't try to cure me. I know what's going to go down. I'm leaving and my hindbrain is not going to like you. Now, just because he had that one moment where he's like, don't take me home, kill me. I don't believe that was I don't think it was altruistic. Hmm. I think he knew exactly what he would become.
Hmm.
I might be cynical.
I wonder too if we'll get more from his point of view of what that change was like.
It don't need to be a whole season.
It doesn't need to be a whole season, but I think an episode of like what his transition was like would be really interesting.
Oh yeah, that would be great. I hope they flash back to that.
Yeah, and also maybe like, you know, like, what did he hear? What was the moment for him that made him turn?
Mm.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because he got bit by something that was not... That was... Yeah. Did he see that thing?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Is it wrong that my first thought for all of that was just blow up the whole country? I mean...
That's basically how the other countries felt.
Take off the entire colony from orbit.
Yeah.
Oh, girl, just let's fix it now.
Why are we still messing with these Americans again?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you know what? Isn't that what they do? Let's just do what they do. But I did think that was interesting that they deviated from some of the other, you know, outbreak type shows, including Outbreak, for how they handled this type of stuff on screen. I thought it was interesting writing. I thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. But I killed everybody.
Okay. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Great show. If you haven't watched it, get your life, get on it, and then tweet Fox that if they we march.
Yeah.
Please then I watch can't this we march.
Please see the doctor for coordination efforts. But yeah, no. Yeah, no, it's a great show. It's a great trilogy. If you got some time, it's a good book. You can pick it up and put it down and still fall back into it. But it is a big book. All three are. Great show. Great source material.
But it's not a Game of Thrones type book where they're like describing the color of the sea. I mean, for as big as it is, it's dense.
And it moves.
I was going to say it's dense and it moves. So you don't have to worry about, oh, God.
Yeah, you don't get bogged down. Even when you switch up point of view, you don't get bogged down in the minutiae. Like Cronin is he's stylized, but he's very to the point. Like he's going somewhere.
Yeah.
Good to know. I'm definitely going to. I think it's on my library queue. I borrowed too many things from Hoopla recently, so I can't do anything until next month. Yeah. I didn't know that they have really good movies on there, and I was like, oh snap, I can just borrow these movies. What's going on?
Little good to you.
People, I'm telling everyone, we are not using our public libraries the way we should, because they have so many resources, like streaming stuff, digital audiobooks, comics, books, all of that. Like, yes,
I got Overdrive, I got Cloud, I got Hoopla, all on my tablet. It's a beautiful thing.
When I realized that I could borrow movies and stream them to my TV from my phone, I'm telling you, whole game has changed. It's a wrap. It's a wrap for you, hoes. I'm out here.
Like, I'm sorry. I'm busy.
Thank you so much for joining me. We will be back. Well, we are recording another Captain Marvel review later on today. We have Supergirl on Monday with the amazing Lex Luthor episode. I'm just assuming it's amazing already because John Cryer is playing Lex Luthor.
I think it's a fair statement.
I'm sorry.
I just said, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah. And then I am pretty sure that I saw somewhere that the finale of Black Lightning is this week. So, yeah, Black Lightning's almost over. I haven't watched since we last recorded about it. So we'll see
I'm not watching. So exactly.
So we'll see how that pans out. But yeah, that's ending. So that's a thing that's happening.
Yeah, I quit on air. So,
but yeah, there's a ton of content coming out right now. All the shows are back. All the things are back. So yeah, you'll be hearing our voices a lot. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.